initiated by Dr. Hal Windlass at University of Miami. And he was at a hearing, and he heard that Florida Power Light, they're planning to put a new nuclear power plant down there at Turkey Point. And they're planning for this new power plant. They were thinking that there would be a one-foot rise of sea level by the year 2100. And as scientists, we find that a very low estimate. And we are very concerned that they would locate this new nuclear power plant only a foot above sea level. So Dr. Wanless, he initiated this letter, and other people signed on to it, saying, Governor Scott, you really need to pay attention to this issue because, you know, a lot of stuff is being planned. Infrastructure is being planned on this once it rises sea level, and that just isn't sufficient given that, you know, what we know about the environment today.
So what was the governor's initial response to the letter?
Initially, he said that he would have his staff meet with us. And then when Governor Crist, former Governor Crist, agreed to meet with us, Governor Scott said that he himself would meet with us. So, and I met with Governor Crist on Friday, and we had a very good exchange. He was a very good student. He passed his quiz with flying colors. And I'm looking forward to talking to Governor Scott as well. Me and the other scientists are.
And if you're just joining the program, climate scientists are weighing in on the state's governor's race, asking for meetings with the candidates to discuss Florida's potential vulnerability. What are your concerns about sea level rise and how it could impact Florida and how this is affecting the political race? We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Dr. Chanton, Governor Scott echoed the refrain of many top Republicans around the country when asked about this issue. He said, look, I'm not a scientist. Charlie Crist responded to that by saying, I'm not a scientist either, but I have a brain and I can talk to one. What was your reaction to that back and forth?
Well, you know, as an educator, I keep up with the latest developments in climate science, and I also am a researcher as well. And so I'm, you know, we've learned so much as a scientific community over the past 15 years about how the Earth system works. And we get to tell that to young people, and we give them lectures, and we make them read material, and then we give them tests on that. And so we are informing young people about how the Earth works. But we never get to talk to older people about how the Earth works. And we have a lot of new information. It's just quite amazing. It astounds me the way the Earth functions. And, you know, to have an older person that has some possibility of power to listen to me is just fantastic because I think we have a very compelling story to tell. You know, like the ice core records show this climate variability back through the last ice age, and we have records of climate now that go back 800,000 years, and we have records of carbon dioxide concentration that go back 800,000 years, and this is the so-called Pleistocene period, when we had the ice ages, and when we have these glacial periods, when it's very cold, the carbon dioxide concentration is low. It's about 180 parts per million. And then we go into these warm periods, interglacials, and then the CO2 concentration is 280. So for the last 800,000 years, climate has oscillated through these warm and cold periods, and CO2 is oscillated with temperature between 180 and 280. Then, because of the Industrial Revolution, in the last 200 years, we spiked up the CO2 concentration in an exponential manner. It's now 400. So you might think, you know, you might just suppose that because CO2 is higher than it's been for the last 800,000 years, that temperature might follow that. And the sea level is controlled by two things, the ice volume on land and the temperature of the ocean. So as the temperature of the Earth warms up, the oceans will expand, the ice caps will melt, and that will rise sea level. And that brings us back to the nuclear power plant issue in Turkey Point. 1 foot rise by 2100, it just may not be enough.
And you think that's a conservative estimate. Can you share your thoughts? Give us the worst case scenario for Florida. Now, some South Florida counties, Miami-Dade and Broward in particular, have already begun their own independent climate mitigation efforts. They're already seeing regular flooding. If massive action isn't taken to address this climate issue, what's the worst case scenario for Florida?
Well, there's two things that control sea level. There's the ice volume on land and the temperature of the ocean. And the last IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that's an international organization, and they get consensus of all the countries in the world. And they the consensus of all the countries in the world, the scientists and the government people, was that by 2100, there would be a 17-inch rise in sea level by 2100, 17 inches. But that IPCC group is very conservative, and it has nations in it. For example, Saudi Arabia, a big oil producer. And in that estimate, they only considered thermal expansion of sea level. They did not consider melting of the glaciers. So you might think that that 17-inch rise in sea level is a lower limit, very conservative estimate, and that it will be somewhere higher than that. And there was a report by this scientist, Gary Meacham. He's at University of South Florida, and he suggested that there might be a 35-inch rise in sea level by the year 2100. Now, these are all scientific estimates. They're informed, you know, scientific guesses, if you will. I mean, they're better than guesses. They take the best knowledge that we have right now, and they project forward. But, you know, the past is a key to the future, and in the past, because of climatic oscillations, with carbon dioxide of only 100 ppm, you know, sea level goes up and down 100 meters or 300 feet. So, you know, sea level is a very changeable thing. It's something that goes up and down all the time, and it is correlated with CO2 concentration. When CO2 is high, sea level is high.
So under these models, the website Climate Central breaks down these predictions by region. You can look at your region of the country to get a sense of mm-hmm. what's down the road. Under this scenario, Dr. Chanton, most of Florida, if nothing is done, will be underwater in your estimation by the year 2100.
Oh, I wouldn't say most of Florida would be underwater. I think we might expect a 17-inch rise or more. I don't think that, you know, that will invade our coastlines. Most of our people live on our coastline. That's our most expensive real estate. But I wouldn't say that most of Florida.
The best part of it will be underwater.
That's what.
The best part of it.
All of the expensive real estate.
Okay, so you are carrying this message to Charlie Crist, Rick Scott. I assume you'll reach out to some of the other candidates in the race, the Libertarian candidate, the other Democratic candidate, Nan Rich. Is your goal to influence state policy on climate? In your perfect world, what would the state government, what would Tallahassee do about this?
Well, I'm not a lobbyist. I just would like this to be an issue that the politicians take seriously. And it's my opinion from speaking with people and looking at polls that the citizenry is aware of this issue, and the citizenry knows what's going on and wants its leadership to do something about it. And as the usual fashion, it seems like our government rules from behind. The citizens get out on an issue, and the politicians, the government, follows along. And right now, I think we've got the citizenry involved in this. They care about this issue. They think that something should be done. And so now the politicians have to follow along and do what the people want. And the people want this to be taken seriously. That's all we ask is that, I mean, to have a governor or a candidate for governor talk to a scientist, when was the last time that ever happened, you know? So, yeah, it's fantastic. And we would love to talk to any people in leadership, anybody that will listen and give us the time. We will talk to them and just tell them what we think is happening on this earth. And we have, you know, an amazing story to tell. You know, for example, that ice core record that we have, that record is replicated in the deep sea. The record of glacial to interglacial cycles, you can find that in marine sediments and the shells of these tiny animals called forams. You know, so here's the same record. You find it in ice cores and you find it in the deep sea. It's just mind-blowing, you know, what scientists have been able to do.
And if you're just joining the program, climate scientists from around Florida have asked for meetings with the leading candidates for Florida governor. We're speaking with one right now. What are your questions for him? The number to join the show, 549-2937. Let's go to Cecile in Orange Park. Hey, Cecile, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to put in my two cents on, number one, it's fantastic to hear somebody using climate change instead of the common term that we hear all across all the time, global warming. I consider myself an average citizen. You know, I vote, I don't research online all of our candidates' voting records and so on. Yeah, I watch the news. I still get the paper in print. I read it occasionally. But I pay attention. But what I see as a major problem that our legislators fight over so often is that term global warming. It just angers me all the time that it doesn't matter what term we use. The fact is that it's happening, and there's something that the climate change is happening. And we know there are things that we can do about it. And what they continue to do is say, well, we don't have the budget right now, so let's put it on the back burner. And every year that goes by, the changes move, and it gets more and more expensive as the time goes on. And, you know, as 2050 comes around, it's going to be, you know, to make those changes that we need to make now, it's just going to be so out of range.
All right. And that's Cecile in Orange Park. Cecile, thanks for the call. Dr. Chanton.
Yeah, she's exactly right that things are getting out of range. By the year 2100, if we continue as we're doing now, business as usual, the CO2 concentration will be over 700 parts per million. And as I said before, you know, all through the last million years, it's been between 180 and 280. Now it's 400, and by the year 2100, it's going to be over 700. And it has not been that high for millions of years. And so it's bringing us back to you know, it has the potential to bring us back to a climatic situation that the Earth has not experienced for a really long time. And this is not a save the Earth issue. This is a save the human issue, because climate change leads to disruption, and it leads to interferes with economic activity, as we saw this winter. Just a few bad winter storms hurt the economy. You know, the economy didn't grow in the first quarter, and that was mild, you know. Our civilization grew up in a very quiescent climate over the last 1,000 years or so. And as we juice the climate by putting more heat into it, you get more erratic behavior of weather patterns. And that hurts economic activity and causes us to be poorer.
But let me ask you about the political resistance, Dr. Chan, particularly on the Republican side, to just changing the way we do business. Climate scientists are arguing for a whole paradigm shift, cutting emissions, reducing carbon pollution from existing power plants. There's quite a bit of resistance. I think it's a big underestimation to say, to doing that because of the upfront costs. How do you see that playing out, the politics of this? You and your colleagues aren't politicians. You're not partisans. But politics inevitably plays a role in this discussion.
Yeah, you know, we're just asking for common sense things to be done, but it's so hard to change the ship of state because so many people have these vested interests in things going the way they are. And you know, we saw this kind of with the BP spill. You know, like, we can't go after a corporation like BP because who owns that corporation? Well, it's owned by widows and orphans. You know, people's retirements is all tied up in that. And, you know, all this fossil fuel in the ground that we have, all these fossil fuel reserves, they have tremendous value. And if we were to devalue those fossil fuels, it would upset our economy. Yet this has to happen, because if we were to burn all the fossil fuel that's in the ground, all that oil, all that coal, all that natural gas, all that was burned over the next, let's just say, 300 years, what would our atmosphere be like? You know, it would be a completely different world that we would live in.
Let's go to Richard let's go to Richard in Riverside and get him on. Richard, go ahead. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, we have the mayor instituted stormwater fee. I was wondering if we could use a fee for the air we breathe to do this. They have all kinds of things where they could run individuals in, actually, if you want to go that far, and find out how much air they breathe and all that, and tie that to it. Now,
Are you making a joke, Richard?
No, he's not making a joke at all.
Okay.
He's dead serious that we need to charge for the air we breathe. People would probably appreciate how the air is.
How precious it is? Okay. Thanks, Richard.
I think
you should.
It is and everything. And it would probably go a long way in doing this. Now, technically, we have the means to do this. You know, the doctors can do that and everything, but, you know, we don't have to go that far. Actually, we have a storm water fee. We could have an air tax, too.
All right. Thanks, Richard, for the call. Okay. So
can I comment on that?
Yes.
Because what Richard has just said is a brilliant solution. You know, we pay for stormwater management. We pay to take out our garbage and we treat our garbage. We pay when we flush our toilets, and that goes down in this sewage treatment. We pay for that. We treat the waste. But there is one waste product that we just are allowed to freely disseminate into the atmosphere, and that's carbon dioxide from our tailpipes and our fossil fuel plants. So rather than charge people for breathing air, why don't we charge people for waste disposal into the atmosphere? It's a simple matter of waste management, and every other waste we treat, and we pay to treat it. But there's one that's free, and that's what's got to change, waste management.
Lots of feedback. Meanwhile, on social media, on our Facebook page, Dan writes, sticking your head in the sand shouldn't be your environmental policy. The job of the governor is to use the best information available and use it to set policy. Mike tweets the show, we love how people make jokes about global warming when there's a long bad winter, but they don't say anything when we set heat records. And then from Brian, make sure that the independent candidates for governor get the meeting with climate scientists, too. Let's go to Bill in Mandarin. Hey, Bill, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Two questions. One in follow-up about the air we breathe. Was there any study done showing, forgetting the heat issue, what effects on plant and human life there would be if we had this higher intake of carbon dioxide? And second, there have been a lot of studies on the amount of carbon dioxide, but have they divided it down by those heat-producing type things? What I mean by that is I'm driving in my car right now. When I pull into my parking lot, turn it off, it still emits heat like the Bunsen burner. Has that study been done to see what effects it has by itself?
All right. Thanks for those questions. Dr. Chan.
Okay. Carbon dioxide, at the levels we're at now, it's non-toxic. It's not a threat to life, per se. What it will do is it's related to climate, and it's related to the overall temperature of the Earth. And when the Earth has a low CO2 concentration, climate is cooler. And when climate is warmer, the CO2 is high. There's this magnificent correlation that goes back 800,000 years that shows this. And so as CO2 goes up, the Earth will likely heat up. There's already beginning to do that. There's concrete evidence that the oceans are heating up. We see the melting of the ice caps. We see the thinning of the Arctic Ocean, and the Arctic sea ice extent gets smaller every year. And this leads to other positive feedbacks for climate, because as that Arctic Ocean turns in, as the Arctic ice cap, like the Arctic Ocean has got a frozen layer on top of it, as that melts more and more, then you're decreasing the reflectivity of the Earth, because like snow, when you go snow skiing, you get a lot of glare off of that. That's reflected sunlight. And as the Arctic Ocean melts, it's going to absorb more sunlight, and it's going to heat the Earth, melt more of the Arctic Ocean, heat the Earth more, and you get these positive feedbacks associated with higher CO2 and higher temperature. And all of these things kind of snowball together. So CO2 is not toxic, but it changes the way the Earth works. And that could lead to discomfort and war, because as people start fighting over limited resource.
Let's go to
Mike.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. As for the other thing you said, the heat that's generated by your engine, there is a thing called the heat island effect that's in cities. So all the asphalt and all the stuff in cities that absorbs heat, but that's another whole issue.
Okay, Mike in Jacksonville has been holding. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, is this thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I just listened to the comment a moment ago regarding charging people to exhale. If you want to lose people, that's the way to do it. I understand that you're not a politician, but realistically, scientists really need to start learning to play the political game and the public relations game, and because that's the enemy that they're confronting, and that's the battlefield on which they're trying to fight to get their issues moved forward. I agree with everything that the scientists have to say with regards to climate change, and I do agree that everything needs to be done. But when you've got the CEO of Nestle talking about how clean water is not a right and he should be able to charge it people for clean water, I mean, that's the kind of thinking you're up against. And you're going to lose people when you start talking about ludicrous schemes like charging people to exhale. You really need to start playing the game a lot better and a lot smarter. And you need to start focusing on things like advancing science education and also calling out the press when they try to equivocate and try to say things like when they start reporting the controversy rather than reporting the facts, which Neil deGrasse Tyson just had some really good comments to say with regards to that, which came down on the side of criticizing the press for not fairly covering the issue and treating it more as a controversy rather than, hey, this is science, and the thing that they're up against is people who are essentially preaching ludicrous beliefs. So I'd like to hear your response regarding that. I mean, I'm all for what you're saying, but I think you really need to get a little bit more realistic. And yeah, you're not a politician, but you better start becoming one, because nobody's fighting your fight for you in the political offices, and you need to be working on advancing that, and you need to be working on getting the public behind you on this.
And that's Mike. That's Mike in Jacksonville. Thank you, Mike. And let me just say before you respond, Doctor, on this program, we cover the climate issue extensively, beginning with the premise that this is settled science. But go ahead, Dr. Chan.
Okay, I certainly wasn't advocating that people be charged to exhale. All I was saying is that we treat all of our other waste that we expel. And I'm talking about, you know, solid waste as garbage, liquid waste as sewage, but the waste from our power plants and our tailpipes, that just is going into the atmosphere untreated for free. And so I was advocating that there needs to be some kind of treatment involved in that. And why is that a free? Why can we discharge to the atmosphere, but yet when we discharge to the water, we're charged for it?
Right. Let me ask you, though, because we're running a little short on time. His point that climate scientists for years have been sounding this alarm and have had trouble breaking through to the political class and the public at large. What do you see as the solution to that?
Well, you know, I'm one of those people. I started giving talks to this to the general public and churches and anybody that would have me 15 years ago. And, you know, you reach out to this choir eventually, and it's hard to break through. And, you know, I was very discouraged about it. And this thing with Governor Scott and Governor Crist right now is, I find this very encouraging. And I can only attribute it to that the public awareness of this issue has spread, and the public understands it better than the political class. And so the political class is going to have to start listening to the public.